cliffcentral.com.
That's The Weeknd with Blinding Lights. And if you've just come out of The Weeknd and you feel like you've been blinded by the lights.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
What a perfect Monday song.
It is good. All right. It's just after 7, cliffcentral.com. A lot of people back at work today. You might want to know what's happening in the world around you. Well, there's all so much stuff going on. It's very hard for us to keep up with everything. But I do feel it's important that we let you in on what Gwyneth Paltrow is selling, because it's sold out, in case you were wondering what you could buy for someone for their birthday, maybe in January, or maybe an early present that they might need.
Is it a makeup palette?
It's not a makeup palette.
Or sucking cups, she does the cupping.
Yeah, she's got this website called Goop.
Yeah.
And they sell all kinds of interesting things there, but retailing for $75 on the website for the actress's lifestyle brand Goop, the candle literally does what it says on the tin, with the scent being described as funny, gorgeous, sexy, and beautifully unexpected. What is it, the scent of this candle?
Say it.
It says on the label, it says, Goop, Gwyneth Paltrow, this smells like my vagina.
No,
I have so many questions. I don't know.
Describing how on earth the candle came to be, the description on the site reads, the candle started as a joke between perfumer Douglas Little and Gwyneth Paltrow. They call her GP. The two were working on a fragrance, and she blurted out, ugh, this smells like a vagina, but evolved into a funny, gorgeous, sexy, and beautifully unexpected scent. Turned out to be perfect as a candle. We did a test run. And it sold out within hours.
So anyone who wants to know what Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina smells like,
you buy this candle. Except that it's sold out. And then they've added a bunch of stuff that I've never thought you'd find in a vagina, but here we go. Blend of geranium, citrusy bergamot.
Sorry, I can't take this
cedar.
Seriously.
It juxtaposes it with damask rose and ambrette seed that just puts you in a mind of fantasy, seduction, and a sophisticated warmth. Imagine being the person who writes this shit.
Why? Just why? And who buys this? I guarantee, calling it what it is, there are some freaks who are into Gwyneth who just bought this to be able to, like, have a moment.
Well, there are a lot of freakish people who would buy it. I mean, there's, if you just look at her extreme health
advice.
Yeah, extreme health advice and practices, things that she follows herself.
Mm.
So they're going to be those. They're going to be the ones who buy it as a goofy gift, at your Christmas parties where you exchange silly gifts.
Except this is $75, which I'm not going to spend that money.
Let's say it really does smell amazing and you have it burning in your home. You're entertaining, you have some people over.
Yeah.
People admire the scent. Like, ooh, what is that smell? Oh, yeah, just Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina. What? Yes.
It's called This Smells Like My Vagina.
Yes.
So you would say, if someone asked you, you'd say, oh, this smells like my vagina.
I don't know what my penis smells like.
Oh, my word. Imagine this candle that smells like my penis.
Yeah, no.
It smells like my balls.
No.
Gosh.
Yeah, it just doesn't hold up the same way. I even wouldn't be inclined to buy a candle like that. No, thank you.
All right. We've got other things that are happening in the world that are much more important.
Yes.
And I know...
Monday's hard.
Yeah, of course it is.
But in England, it's going to be even harder.
Tell me why.
Because today is the day that the Queen has called for a face-to-face summit with the princes, Harry, William, and Charles.
Oh.
And Meghan could even phone in, apparently.
Oh.
Well, because she's in Canada.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big day today. It'll take place at Sandringham. An official at Buckingham Palace confirmed reports saying that the meeting, which is now being called the Sandringham Showdown, will go ahead. The official said the royals will review a range of possibilities, and that what the Sussexes said earlier in the week, that they want to live part-time in North America, will be taken into account. So here sits the 93-year-old Queen, who's invincible, and she wants to resolve the situation at pace, meaning days, not weeks, but added that it's understood any solution will take time to be implemented.
Well, it's funny. I saw an article over the weekend that that really has just split people into two camps, this Meghan Harry story. People who really don't give a toss and people who don't really give a shit.
Those are the only two.
Those are the two groups that people... No, but in reality, even people who don't care have an opinion on this. And you bump into people like, oh, please, the royal family. I don't care about the royal family. But then within 5 minutes of talking about it, they suddenly have opinions. Mm. You know what I mean. Suddenly they're busy telling you, no, but I'm on Meghan's side. Because really, you know, this is the British press. That's the one argument. The one argument is that the British press have been so unfair.
Yeah, and also on that same side is Harry, who's witnessed the press destroying his mother's life.
Correct. And those people are like, oh, but I would also, this is about independence, about well, them going
I'm on that side, but I don't speak that way.
I'm going to make you sound like that for the purposes of this argument.
Yeah, just and then, putting it out
and
there.
And on the other side, you've got people who go, oh, well, you know, like Piers Morgan, these are spoilt millennials who think that they're entitled to make decisions about an institution that's hundreds of years old, which they belong to, and they've got tremendous privilege as a result of belonging to that, and now they must do their duty.
I think it's quite sad the way, I mean, Harry and the Queen have always had this little jokey, fun grandmother-grandson relationship, mm-hmm. and that's now gone and soured. But I think the most important thing in all of this is not to forget the real villain.
Who?
In the royal family.
Who? Who's the real villain?
Epstein's buddy.
Oh yes. Prince Andrew.
Ah, so the greatest meme. The memes. Not, yeah, the memes coming out of this are so good. The best one I've seen is Prince Harry in a McDonald's uniform handing over a McDonald's meal through the window, right? Because now he's got to get a job.
A real job.
And then he says, oh, hi, Uncle Andrew. Who's the Happy Meal for?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's awkward. Well, talking about so many people having an opinion on this, I'm not just reserving my feelings for when this is all resolved and we know better. But even someone like the royal family's private chef is speaking out on this. And this is a private chef who has been with the family for 30 plus years, like was around when Prince Harry and William were still like little tiny babies. And he said he's not surprised by a move like this. And he actually thinks that it's more spurred by Prince Harry than it is by Duchess Meghan. And that's because, I'm laughing, it's not so funny. He says that Prince Harry has been bullied a lot within the family. Like he was always, of course it was obvious from the get-go that he will most likely not be the main ruler in the family because he'll just never get to that point. But
spare.
Then secondly, he was always referred to as the airhead of the family.
Oh, really?
Not the... H-E-I-R
no,
head.
No, not the H-E-I-R head, but the airhead. So it's now like, well, okay, maybe Prince Harry has gotten to the point where he's kind of feeling ticked off. And it's like, well, you guys won't take me seriously and you don't really care about me. Well, fine, let me just go and leave. But in a more rational tone, I was reading up on different perspectives over the weekend. And I think the consensus on like three or four articles that I read was that these conversations were just subtly brought up within the family even months ago. And this is why we heard of speculation about like, oh, Prince Harry and Duchess Meghan are moving to California, even from the beginning of their marriage. And so it's been in the works for a while. But it's just the fact that the couple announced this on social media without the Queen's approval. That's why it's a bigger deal now. And according to people who say they're close to the couple, it was they wanted to announce it on social media to beat other tabloids to this. So they didn't want the tabloids to release this first, so rather that's why they quickly released it on social media. We don't know, folks.
All we know is that today's meeting is going to be very tense.
I actually don't think it's that scandalous in any anymore. Now I've realized, I think there was one other British royal, and I don't their name has slipped my mind, ages ago, who decided to step down from their title.
Oh, it was Edward VIII.
Edward VIII,
there
yes.
we go. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
He was already king, and he married Wallis Simpson.
Who's an American divorcee,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah.
Meghan Markle,
social
American
climber
divorcee.
Like Meghan Markle.
But also, there are tons of other people in history as well. People take early retirement. Oh, people step down.
There's this movie, The Two Popes. There's,
yeah.
You know, he was actually the Pope, and he resigned and let someone else take over.
So now I'm just like, okay, if that's what they want to do, go ahead.
Let's turn our attention to the other royal family in Britain, the TV royal family, because they have...
The Kardashians?
No, there's a new season of Love Island. Now, why do I bring this up?
Oh, yes.
Love Island's the most popular show in Britain. People just... they're obsessed with it. Sia, you remember last year, the year before when we were there, it was just the biggest thing ever. It's all anyone's talking about. It's a bunch of good-looking people that they put into a house, sort of like Big Brother. And then people fall in love and they get naked and they do all kinds of fun stuff.
Pair off, cheat on each other.
But what's clever about it is they don't have ugly people in the show. And really, this is important for television. Everybody knows if you want to have people watching a television show, you don't put ugly people in it. That's the formula. But the interesting thing about this season is it's happening where? Well, they're filming it in Cape Town. Listen to this.
His mate Richard, of course, has taken the excuse to have a little sojourn in January and has taken out the winter-summer wardrobe. Now, what have we got for us today?
I know, I've broken out my resort wear in the middle of January. What's that about, Ben? Yeah, I won't lie to you, it is a lovely jolly. I'm feeling like Andy Peters. I've clocked up some air miles, but it is all for a very, very good reason. I'm on a vacation. 12 new mounts entering the villa this weekend, and we've been given exclusive access to the first time you will see the Cape Town Villa. As you can see, they're still giving a few final tickles to the villa for all the contestants.
Tickles?
Become ensconced. Like a couple of ITV production staff over there, actually. I don't think you can actually see them, but they're clearly busy grafting. They don't just throw this show together, you know. And as you can see, we've got men hard at work here trying to get the place shipshape for when the contestants come in. But I'll tell you what the main thing is about this place is the sheer scale of it. Never mind the beautiful Table Mountain behind me. Take a look at this. I've been privileged enough to go to the villa in Mallorca. This is at least twice the size. Obviously, it's a proper residence, but it's been given the Love Island tickle. You recognize the familiar elements from the gym, the beanbags, of course. Brexit, what's that? And also the fire pit as well. And as my nan used to say to me in the pursuit of love back in my misspent youth, there is a lid for every pot. And they certainly mean that here in Love Island in Cape Town. There is some.
All right, so they've given them a huge big villa in Constantia where they're going to be filming it.
So it's not on the beach?
No, it's not on the beach, but they'll probably go down to the beach a few times. I'm sure they will. They'll find reasons to. It's the season in Cape Town, which means that they'll probably be around.
So they're actually filming right. They're setting up to film right now.
So if you see a bunch of good-looking British people.
Very tanned.
First of all, you'll think, how is this possible? Good-looking and British in one person.
And tanned.
Yeah.
Not burnt to a crisp.
Yes. They will be probably from Love Island if you're in Cape Town and you see this. So there's something to think
well,
about.
Well, I don't know if you'll probably see them before and after, but maybe not during.
What do you mean?
Because they're on like lockdown. They don't...
Ugh, please. They'll go out. I'm sure they will. I don't think it's like you're being imprisoned. You're not imprisoned.
I never really got into the Love Island hype, but a lot of my friends are. Has anyone watched it yet?
No.
I'm busy watching Bachelor in Paradise at the moment, which is always at the same spot in Mexico with a beach that's starting to look a bit grabby.
Yeah.
Are you up to date with the American Bachelor?
No, because we can't get it early here.
Because I saw some scandal around
there. I know,
there.
And I'm trying to avoid it.
Never
all.
Mind. Never mind.
All right.
Fine, just wait for South African Bachelor to return then.
Let's go to some other things that are happening before we get to what we're going to do a little bit later on, which is talk to Melody Qaba, who is the entrepreneur who is also with Henley's Business School. She's just been awarded the Henley Business School Johnny Clegg MBA Scholarship. That was in 2018, and she's going to tell us the stories of how exactly she thinks when it comes to putting together the ideas behind an MBA, her own business plan, and what she's been doing in terms of getting everybody on board with what the world of tomorrow may need in terms of skills.
Fabulous.
Yeah, we'll speak to Melody in a short while. That's at 7:30. Okay, Leanne Moll, what else?
I've been turning a bit of a blind eye, I have to admit, to the fires in Australia, purely because a lot of the footage is coverage of animals in distress. And I have panic attacks watching these animals trying to escape the flames and these koalas. And, you know, everyone there is doing a lot to help. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of people driving around with koalas in their cars that they've picked up from the roadsides, and they're taking them to a place of safety. But I actually really have been battling to watch the footage and read the stories. But the one thing that did come up is people are a little bit, they feel a bit snubbed by Amazon. Because Amazon's donation to the Australia bushfire recovery is insulting to some people.
Why? What did they do?
Well, he announced that the company, Jeff Bezos did, that the company is donating $690,000, which is 1 million Australian dollars.
Yeah.
And people are saying, well, if you put it in perspective, he's worth 116 billion. And the figure's equal to 0.00059% of his net worth.
Do you know what you're worth, or do you know what Sia's worth?
I know I'm not worth much.
So imagine if you did a good thing, like you gave money that you didn't have to give to a cause, and I then did a what do they call it, a forensic audit of you, and decided that your donation wasn't good enough. What would you do? You'd immediately take back that donation and say, F you.
Yeah, I probably would. So people have actually gone a bit more into it and said that it's the equivalent of someone worth $50,000 donating 29 cents.
So what?
It's a donation.
There's this great saying, don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
Exactly.
I mean, really, if someone gives you something for nothing, if someone is prepared to help, even if it isn't as much as you think they should be putting in, who the hell are you? You're not Jeff Bezos' accountant. You're also not the chief philanthropic officer at Amazon.
I haven't been understanding why people are pitting these famous donors against each other. Maybe they think it's for the good to encourage more people to give. But it's also like, firstly, let's call a thing a thing. No one is forced to give.
No.
And then if I feel like giving, I will give whatever I feel like giving.
Correct.
You know, I saw...
There are millions of causes in the world. Mm. I know that this one is dire and it's an emergency.
I saw like Nicole Kidman was dragged for how much she donated because she's from Australia. And they were like, how dare she only donate X amount as opposed... I think she only donated like $500,000 US. I could be wrong. As opposed to Chris Hemsworth, who's also originally from Australia, and he donated $1 million US. So it's now like, oh, Nicole, well, you have so much money.
Yeah, but you
are from Australia.
Poor people. And mostly journalists who earn as little as they do because that's all they deserve, who are complaining about people who are richer than them.
Yeah.
And what those people who are richer than them do with their money. Let me remind you, what other people do with their money is none of your business. You have no right whatsoever just because someone's on a Forbes list to decide how much of it they should give away. And by the way, none of it should come to you if you're the person saying that.
Look, it's also one thing to state something like that, but I even had to hold myself back when Kylie Jenner had put last week on her Instagram stories. So she posts one post and she says, Australian fires, please help the climate, you know, this is horrible, donate when you can. And then her next Insta story is a photo of her feet in these limited edition slippers. I think they were Louis Vuitton slippers, and they're like made from mink fur. And I'm like, Kylie, Maybe you could have posted those slippers later.
Someone said to her, you need to do something about, you need to post something about the fires.
Yeah, she doesn't care about the fires. So if Amazon only donates X amount of money, none of your business. You should be grateful that someone is helping. How much are you giving? If you're so critical of everyone else who's giving, how much are you giving? If you're not giving away as much or more, you have no right to say anything about them.
And at the end of the day, let's just hope that this money goes towards really helping them. And it will, because it's not in a vacuum. There are a lot of people donating money. Mm. So it's all good.
Well, like I said, what they really should do with this money is dispense with all that red tape and regulation around people clearing the bush around their own property, because the Australians are well known all over the world for being a complete nanny state and having way too much regulation. Government are involved in everything, makes it impossible for farmers and small landholders to actually clear their own land that they own, because government has regulations everywhere. This is what happens when you have an overregulated society. And they should find out who the arsonists are who started these fires. Those would be very, very practical steps that can be taken.
Mm.
And also, and I think rightfully so, a lot of people are holding the Australian leaders to account and saying, actually, it's all good and well that people are donating, but this shouldn't let you guys off the hook. You're the government, you rule for a reason, you know about certain things, you should be prepared for certain things. So actually, like, stand up and do something as well.
Okay, so there's Australia. Mm. Apparently, tourists were fined for exiting a vehicle in the Kruger National Park. I don't know how people still think that this is acceptable. You're going into a nature reserve. It is not for humans. It is for the animals. There are little cordoned off areas behind fences where the humans are allowed to traipse around. The rest is for the animals. And if you don't like that, don't go to the Kruger Park, because the rest of the country is for humans.
Why
totally
even risk
agree
it?
With you. And this photograph actually went viral. It was of four tourists sitting on top of the car, just lazing about, watching lions.
There's only one annoying part.
Oh, hang on.
Oh, sorry.
There we are.
There's only one annoying part about this sort of stuff is that, unfortunately, the animals don't get to these people and eat them in time.
I know.
That's what really gets me. I wish they'd all be eaten. They're cretinous.
I know.
Why even risk it like this?
Well, they were fined. It's a social media opportunity for this photograph. They were fined $3,000. So as they were sitting on the roof while observing one of the most dangerous animals in the park, lions, they were approached by a section ranger. And then the section ranger brought along a peace officer who then escorted them to Skukuza, where R3,000 fine was issued. I don't even know if that's... They should get more out of it, actually.
Hmm.
You're not even supposed to put any part of your body out of the window. Never mind get out and sit on the roof.
Yeah.
It's also like, what will the fine do? I mean, these people are clearly silly enough to risk it all.
Well, it should be higher so that the park can use the money for something.
Oh, I guess.
Yeah, it should be crippling.
I don't even like the idea of doing these drives on your own. And I've been to a couple of game reserves before, and a couple have the option of taking your own car and driving around. I'm like, I need to know where to stop, drop, and roll if an animal comes up. I don't want to do that alone. No,
but that's
thank
a scaredy
you.
Cat in you.
I'd rather be a scaredy cat that's alive and in one piece than, you know,
than being killed by a cat.
A lion's afternoon snack.
Oh, yeah. Leanne, you know what we could do as a solution? So I don't know if you know this guy called the Emperor Nero a little while back. He used to do some cool stuff, though. He was like nuts, right? So he used to, while he was dining in his dungeon, he would have people be feasted on by like wolves while he ate as entertainment. So maybe we could like expand the entertainment market with idiots like this.
Well, Gareth always wanted to have some kind of Roman,
absolutely
Romanesque, put criminals into a pit, watch them be eaten by lions thing.
Not even criminals, idiots. Because these people are idiots. They shouldn't walk around and procreate. So what we could do is, let's add entertainment. And we need more tourists at the moment, right? Make
it's
that part of our
way to get tourists involved.
100%.
I agree.
Let the lions get at them. Sure. In a glass room, we watch them and let the lions ravage them.
All right, very good.
I'd love that.
Yeah, I like this too. By the way, someone just sent me a message to say that most of Port Elizabeth has been without power and they haven't had power all night. No news on when it'll come back online. Eskom are breaking down everywhere. It's ridiculous. Thanks for the message. I didn't know that. This is from Niska. She lives in Port Elizabeth. I didn't know Port Elizabeth ever had power.
I knew that was
coming.
I thought
Port Elizabeth, you still had to smash rocks together to make a spark, and then you could maybe
I was in PE this December.
December, yeah.
And I actually really enjoy the city, I must be honest. It's really peaceful.
Okay.
We were a little further along, just at the start of Jeffreys Bay, so not in all of the thicket of Jeffreys Bay. Because let me tell you, that place is very, very colourful over the festive season. Well, on the first day, we arrived and we needed to go out somewhere to eat because we hadn't bought provisions yet for the house that we'd let on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And we were greeted by this whole bunch of people being pushed out of a club out the back door of a club called the
Dolphin. Blue Dolphin.
The Blue Dolphin.
Jolly Dolphin.
The Jolly Dolphin, sorry, thank you. The Blue Dolphin was in McGregor.
Yes, sorry.
Yes, okay. And so, yeah, there were about five bouncers pushing out these two guys. These guys were bleeding profusely from their heads.
Oh, Jesus.
Heads hanging over the side of the
like
railing.
A good weekend.
It was like, okay, yeah, we've just arrived. Yeah. This is interesting. We didn't get to see any bakuzis, which I was a bit disappointed by.
That's a bucky that's turned into a jacuzzi, right?
Yes. So the back is lined with waterproof lining. Mm. none of those because the weather was a little bit off. But otherwise, we were in a really amazing spot. And we only went into the town to get provisions when we needed to, and went to all of the really nice restaurants on the beach, etc.
Very good. Mm. Well, it doesn't sound like a bad holiday.
No, and yeah, PE is a sweet little town. I love it.
Sure.
Nah, okay. Leah and I studied there. Come on.
Apparently, well, you know, someone who disagrees with you here, this Cassandra, she says, I did an Eastern Cape road trip this holiday. The whole province is just an armpit of South Africa.
Oh, my word.
See, so it's not just me. Mana pools in Zimbabwe. There are no rules about remaining in your vehicle or campsite. Neither are there fences. There are no fences around the campsites either.
Where's that?
So you take your chances. Mana pools in Zimbabwe. Oh.
But that's okay. There's rules here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's an interesting story because I think a lot of people, this is from Hermine. She says, we had a flat tire in the Kruger, all girls, no signal. Mm-mm. We had to change the tire. It was scary as hell.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
That is something else.
Apparently, at Mana Pools, it's not unusual for the hyenas to come and sniff your head while you're sleeping at night in your tent.
Jeez.
Dun, dun, dun. You don't like that.
Angry fun.
All right. That's quite scary.
That's super scary.
One last thing before we get to Melody Klaba. Apparently, families are sending relatives with dementia to Thailand for care. This is the place to go to if you have dementia.
It sounds like, I mean, these are British families that are sending their relatives. It kind of sounds like the headline makes it sound like they're just going to ignore them forever, you know, ship them off to Thailand and leave them there. Mm-hmm. But it's a small but growing trend that a lot of people are starting to do because there is inadequate and expensive care at home. Apparently, if you go to these care resorts, I mean, they're beautiful. They're like 4-star hotels. Mm. They've got these amazing gardens and you can get a lot more quality care there than you can get in the UK for that amount of money. So, yeah, I mean, it means that their family's far away, but
well,
you're dealing with dementia, maybe that, you know.
They don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know what's going on.
I really
on.
Don't mean to be insensitive, but that's the truth.
At least it looks nice.
They'll be in this absolute tropical paradise.
They don't know what's going on. It's great. And, you know, there's the Thai people, everybody says, are just the most pleasant people. They're always keen to please. They're always trying their best to make sure everybody's happy. And if they look after some old person with dementia better than, you know, some angry nurse in a UK home for old people.
For £1,000 a week.
Yeah.
That's how much it costs.
It's extraordinary. I don't know who can afford that.
If I get dementia, please, guys, send me off to Thailand.
You know what? We will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll do that.
I'll put it in my will.
It is time for the second in our season of Meet the Mind, which is all about Henley Business School and their graduates who are doing amazing MBAs and really exciting work. And today we get to talk to Melody Klaba, but before we get to her, Henley Business School's Africa Connect alumni platform was launched in November 2019, and the opening event brought together some of the school's most prominent students and graduates. We caught up with Melody Klaba, an award-winning TV producer and business owner. She's also a mentor to industry hopefuls and recently completed her MBA. So she was an ideal person to ask about the importance of self-improvement.
I think that now, more than ever, we're at a time with digital transformation where things are just changing at such a rapid pace. And the people that are going to thrive in this new economy are not necessarily the most intelligent, the smartest, the hardworking, but are the ones that are able to adapt. So self-improvement just gives you that agility to be able to change yourself, to be able to adapt to different situations. And, you know, that's why it's important.
This is Meet the Mind, the series that gives you insight into some of South Africa's most interesting thinkers. brought to you by Henley Business School. That's right, and she has been awarded the Henley Business School Johnny Clegg MBA Scholarship in 2018. She's also the Chief Creative Officer and co-founder of My Future Work, which is a business that focuses on upskilling and reskilling the workforce for the digital age. So, Melody, it's very nice to see you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And you?
Good, and congratulations on doing all the interesting stuff that you are doing.
Thank you.
We need more people thinking about how to transform what people are going to do, how people can be productive, yes, and how they can make a contribution to the economy in the digital age.
Yes.
Because there's so much old school thinking in that world, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, I don't even know if there's old school thinking. I don't think there's enough thinking, period.
Full stop, right?
Yes. Mm. You know, I don't even think that we can label it as old school, because if it's old school, then it means that it does actually stand a chance of changing. But the problem that we're sitting with right now is that I just don't think that people are thinking about it enough, and people would rather just shove it under the carpet.
Yeah.
Waiting for something. God knows what it is that they're waiting for. but that's just what, you know, the problems that, you know, we see and what we come across. Yeah.
What I've found interesting, and we've spoken to John Flismas, and we're going to speak to some of the other people who are doing MBAs through Henley, because you guys all come from such different backgrounds, and it's such an interesting overlap between creativity and business, yes, which I think is a place of enormous potential and richness. You're thinking left and right brain in some respects.
Yes.
But you, of course, come from television. And I mean, you worked as a TV producer, format developer for 10 years. You produced flagship shows like Jam Alley, Club 808, Our Perfect Wedding, which was born from your own wedding experience.
Yes.
And you went from that success, something which you could have just carried on doing more of the same, and you decided, hell no, I'm actually going to take this in a completely different direction. Explain that journey to us a little bit.
You know, it was, what I'm doing right now is not even something that I expected, you know, that I'd be doing. I honestly thought that I'd probably be in TV until I'm 100 years old, if I live, you know, that long. But just somewhere along the line, about like 7 years into TV, I just started to feel this dissatisfaction. And not necessarily with the work itself, but just, you know, when you're doing TV, you're always reflecting what the society is doing.
Right.
So your ratings, and you know this with radio as well, is that, you know, your ratings are always based on what people are excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the things that people are excited about are not the things that you want to make. You're like, can we just do better? I just like want better for you. And
well, what do you mean? Because OPW, for example, huge ratings bonanza.
Yes.
But it's really, it's showing off some pretty unpleasant people and their pretty unpleasant ideas of what a wedding should be.
Yes.
Is that what it was? You were kind of, this is not what I'd like to reflect.
Well, I mean, so the show didn't start out like that. But anyway, you know, it is what it is right now. And it did give birth to a whole lot of other reality shows that look like that.
Yes.
You know, and that's what TV is reflecting right now. You know, I switch on to watch probably like 80% of South African TV shows, and I just cringe all the time.
Right.
And what makes me cringe is because I understand that it is the collective consciousness of the society. That's what people want to watch, right? This is what they are craving for.
And you've got to be careful that you don't sound like you're looking down on people.
No.
When you create a format as successful as the one that you did,
yes,
you want to be, first of all, people are impressed that you've figured out the magic formula,
yes,
of getting TV ratings, which is increasingly becoming a difficult thing to do. But at the same time, even if you have your misgivings about what it reflects about society, you sort of have to accept that that's what people want to watch. And even if you don't necessarily agree that it's adding value to society,
yes,
you've got to accept, you know, this is what people are looking for. So I'm going to make more of this.
Yes, definitely. And
business.
And, you know, and that's what channels do. You know, they make content based on, you know, what people are going to like. It's business, you know, with media, we make money off advertisers. Advertisers chase ratings. And that's just, you know, that's just what it is. You can even have like the thing that you wish the country would be watching, the thing that you wish the country would be listening to. And if it doesn't give ratings, you're not making any money of it.
Sure.
It's really just that simple.
Then it's like a pet project.
Then it's just like a pet project.
With 20 viewers.
Yes. And for me, I just started to think about, how do I start to contribute to shifting the consciousness of society?
Okay.
Right? And I couldn't find the answers. And I don't even think that I've still, you know, I've got it figured out. I'm not sitting here going, oh, I'm the one with the answer here. But when I went to Henley and I just started, you know, doing my MBA, like literally upon the first module that I was doing, I just realized that something needs to change. I need to get out from what I'm doing. I need to do something that way I can get my hands on the people. And as time went on and I was just like learning more and discovering more, I just realized that there's this huge skills gap that we have in South Africa. And with digital transformation, it's getting even bigger, you know, because the digital divide is so big.
Yeah.
I mean, we can go into a lot more detail as to why it's there. And when people start to become upskilled, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, when people get smarter, they want better. They also want to watch things that, you know, are a lot more uplifting. And so it's, you can't get through the whole, let's change what TV looks like until you change the consciousness of the people.
And how does this MBA help? Because obviously when you're studying business and you're paying attention to what things have worked and things haven't, it opens your eyes. But what kind of materials are you looking for here? Who are you talking to? How are you doing the work around this MBA?
You know, with the MBA, it's more exploration than anything else. For me, that's how it's been. You know, you get the modules, which I think are very similar to, you know, every other MBA, you know, out there. But what I love absolutely with Henley, and especially with me being a creative, the assignments are very industry specific. So you can be given a topic and you're talking managing systems and processes, right? You know, sounds very corporate, right? And technical.
Horrible.
Yeah, it sounds horrible. But then they'll say, we're not going to tell you what case study to do. You do that based on what you want to do. Huh. And that's the fun part of it.
It's flexible.
It's very flexible. Yeah. So you could do that based on your station right now.
Yeah.
Right? So you get to do then research around that, and you get to explore on things that you are interested in. I struggle to generate, as a human being, to just do things that I'm not interested in. I can't commit to anything that I'm not interested
in. So on your page.
So for me, this Henley MBA works for me in that sense, that every single assignment is always something that I'm invested in. Like right now, I'm still actually working on my MBA, so it's not completed yet.
Yeah.
So this is my final year. But I've got an assignment right now that I'm doing on reputation and responsibility, right? And I was just sitting there going, what do I want to talk about? What do I want to write about? And because of, you know, digital transformation, I'm still learning more. I'm actually writing about the case of Cambridge Analytica and Facebook, and how that whole case affected the reputation of Facebook, and what are some of the things that Facebook can do to try and salvage that, especially with the fact that they want to launch Libra, right? Their new cryptocurrency. And do people really trust, you know, using a currency that is off Facebook based on what happened with Cambridge Analytica, how that affected elections and people's data was stolen.
You can really pull this stuff from anywhere as long as it makes a cogent argument and you provide a good case study other people.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes.
And the way you've taken this job of kind of taking people into the digital age and transforming the skills workforce. How many people have you spoken to in the last while, especially while doing the MBA, that have said to you, well, we're going to see significant job losses? They only see it as a losing scenario. Oh, people are not going to be able to find work. That's not true at all, right? Yes. There's going to be a way for people to find useful things that they can do, spaces they can add value to. Going forward, there's probably going to be more opportunity, not less. Or do you disagree?
No, I agree that there'll be more opportunity. But that's also dependable on how much we all come together and do. So people are afraid, and their fears to a certain extent are real. Because when you look at the stats, just last year alone, looking at the banks alone, don't even look at the other companies, just the retrenchments, you know, the job losses, you know, that have happened. And that's real, right? And that has affected people in real life. So it's a real thing. But, you know, then on the other side, you look at that and you've got innovation. Right, as the solution that can help us to offset this impact of job losses. But with innovation, it's not something that you deliver like a job. It's not like a package that's coming via drone from the USA to come and land here to save us all. Right? It's the thing where all of us need to get our hands dirty, get on with it, and actually start doing stuff. And that's the only thing that's going to save us and that's going to help us get up. And the good thing about that is that it's possible. It's literally at our fingertips. And it's something that we can all get involved in.
And do you think a part of that is because there is so much room for us to improve. Like if you're in a country where everything is already figured out and they've got technological solutions to everything, it's almost
a developed country.
Yes. Yeah, it's done. It's yes. kind of there's not a lot that can still be figured out.
Yes.
But we have to figure it out. First of all, there's urgency.
Yes.
And second of all, there's enormous space.
Yes. I think that the beauty of being in a developing world right now is that you can sit and you can look at, you know, all the problems and you can either run away and, you know, feel bad about it, or you can look at the problems and see opportunities. And the great thing about us is that we've got so many problems, which means that we've got so many opportunities. I mean, if you don't know what you want to do, my gosh, pick a problem, hey? Just like pick one, yeah. and you'd be surprised as to how many doors open when you start yeah. thinking about solutions, when you start focusing your energy on how do we find a solution for this and how do we find a solution for that. And I mean, I think that for the next 20 years, we could really, all of us, be employed and make a lot of money if we just focused on solving problems.
Yeah, and also the problems, you can't just copy what's been done in Europe yes. or America.
Yes.
Because Africa is so unique in yes. that way. We have to come up with our own way of doing it.
Yes, definitely.
It's not just automatically going to work here.
Yes, definitely. And I think that's the challenge that some people have when it comes to digital transformation. I mean, when you look at the press, there's also quite a bit of negative press about it, right? Because of the fact that there's the whole approach of copy and paste from what the UK is doing, from what the USA is doing. That's actually not going to work for us. You know, it's not, because we have a different set of problems.
Yep.
You know, we are a different country, a different continent. Yeah. So we actually do have to sit down and figure out what our solutions are going to be that are tailor-made, you know, for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think those solutions can come from the same people who gave us the solutions of 20 years ago.
No, they can't. You know, they're not going to come from there. And with all due respect, they're also not going to come from politicians.
No.
You know what I'm saying? You know, for me, I feel like the government has a very big role to play when it comes to digital transformation in setting up policy, you know, in opening doors. But I can tell you right now, those are not the people that are going to save us. We are the people that are going to save us.
Yeah, but they talk a little bit too much about this fourth industrial revolution as if they know what's going on. It's clear after you listen to them for a couple of minutes that they don't know what they're talking about. Are there a lot of people who are just mouthing off about these things because they're the cool things to talk about? You hear so much from people who really, I mean, even in the media, and you know because you've been in the media, yeah. same as me. A lot of them mouth off about, oh, you know, there's artificial intelligence, there's machine learning. This is, they don't know what those things are.
Well,
they're just saying them because they're cool buzzwords.
Well, I mean, I think, yes, there is quite a bit of that going on.
I mean, you could,
I don't want to get into trouble now and say things about people.
We won't say specific people's names, yes. but it's just people are saying these things because they're the cool things to say at the moment. They've never gone and researched any of this. They don't know how it might impact on a certain sector of the economy.
Yes, and I hope that even with that talk, you know, that there is quite a bit of work happening behind the scenes. It's what I just always hope for when you hear people talking about it, that it's great that you're talking about it, and I hope that you are working on it as well, you know, with the research. No one right now has got it all figured out.
No.
Right? No one does. And if anyone stands up and says we've got it figured out, that, you know, that's a problem right there, because we are all in there, those of us who are in there, figuring it out. Yeah.
And just as soon as a solution is reached for, or some kind of solution for a problem, as soon as that goes live, say, it's only a few days before you already have to change it because of the surroundings and the environment and developments and technology and how it's working.
Yes.
It's just a continuous thing.
It is a continuous thing, and the change is so rapid and so fast. Yeah. I agree with you, is that one, you know, you're 50% to solving one problem and you realize that, oh, flip, I actually need to start expanding on the very same one before I even found the solution for this. Yeah.
Now, let's just talk about some of the things that you've also done. You're a member of the MICT CETA for the Fourth Industrial Revolution Committee. You're in the Labour stream, right?
Yes.
Now, what does that involve?
So it involves advising the CETA on the change in policy.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So you're actually getting your hands dirty there as well?
Yes.
Good.
You know, for me, it's something that's very important for me to do, right? Because you can't neglect, you know, I work in the private sector. You know, I run a profitable company. But at the same time, we can't neglect being involved in setting up policy, in sitting at the table where decisions are made, right? We have to get involved with that. Yeah.
And are there, Are people open in that environment to hear ideas from?
Yes, very much
entrepreneurs
so.
Like you?
Yes, very much so. You know, in the committee that I sit in, very much. They very much open. I think I'm probably the youngest person in there in the committee. And you know, it's been quite great. I mean, it hasn't been that long. It's only just been about 6 months since the committee has been formed. And yes, they are receptive, they are open to it, and we're probably gonna have our first meeting for the year coming up, you know, soon. Yeah.
Okay. You've also been named Mail and Guardian Young 200 in 2019, which means that you're on the list of young people that everyone should be watching. That's not bad. That's very nice.
No pressure.
Don't you think? Does this mean anything to you? Is it nice to get these kinds of awards, this recognition?
You know what? It is. It's nice to get these kinds of awards and recognition. And at the same time, they do help in opening more doors for me to be able to do more work. Right. And for me, that's just what I like about this. Like Mail and Guardian for me has been, it's been great. You know, it's been great. I've gotten even bigger platforms, you know, to be able to push the conversation about the future of work and digital transformation. So it's been fantastic in that
sense. And the Verve Clicquot L Boss Award in 2018. Now, that sounds like a bunch of really cool things. First of all, Verve Clicquot, then L, not a bad, you know, not a bad publication. Boss is in there as well. And award. It sounds like the perfect thing to get. You get free champagne.
That's the most important part.
You get onto the cover of a magazine. You become the boss of something and you get an award. But I mean, that's also nice recognition, and it helps to spread the word about what you're doing.
Yes, yes, definitely. It was a very cool award to get. I'm still doing some stuff with Verve, you know. So, it was incredible as well.
So, do you deal with some of the other students at Henley, or are you in and out at different times? You don't really see each other? Because I know that we're going to be talking to some of the famous people and some of the more interesting people about the way they think, which is why we got you in this morning. But do you see some of these other guys and girls?
Yes, I do. Because I'm very social in general, you know, as a human being. But so I do see a lot of people at Henley when there's events and stuff. I go there, introduce myself, have conversations with people. So it's quite a very friendly environment, not what I expected a business school would be like.
No, I'm trying to, I don't have any expectations. I don't know anything about business schools, but how did you think it was going to be and how did it turn out?
I actually expected it to be, I mean, look, you're there and you're doing an MBA and it's Henley and it's, you know, it's a international school. So I did expect, you know, a level of seriousness about it. And I think it was quite like that in the first couple of months. But I have just watched Henley's environment really just transform, you know, to be very friendly. Not that it was unfriendly in the beginning. I mean, you walk into the school now, I don't know when was the last time you went there, and it's got these beautiful murals, these paintings. You know, for me, it's I walk in there and immediately I identify with the space as an artist, right?
Yeah.
So it's lovely in that sense. And I mean, I really enjoy it. I have made like really great friends.
That's amazing. You know, and the work is stimulating, clearly.
The work is highly stimulating.
Yeah.
Like you just, I mean, at don't remember having a good night's sleep since May 2018, and I mean that in a good way.
So you've been, what, so many ideas flowing into your head that
all the time. It's like you're moving from one module to another. So you know, like you finish marketing and like your mind is flowing with all these things, and it's just like now you're on to the next thing. So you know, it's highly stimulating.
Well, unlike many other business schools that offer a linear experience that force feeds theory to students, Henley Business School offers a holistic learning system. By blending theory with practice, they've got a holistic learning system, which means you can look forward to a business education that provides you with insightful business acumen, the ability to both master yourself and lead and manage others, and exceptionally relevant and practical theory that is tried and trusted in practice in your own workplace. You agree with that, Melody?
Yes, no, definitely I do. Right. Yes, well, there's nothing that's that's forced on you, you know, with Henley. It's very flexible learning. Yeah.
Well, we're going to find out more over the next few weeks as we speak to Melody and others. They have 15 international campuses and offices, 8,000 students across the globe, 18 countries who are represented by faculty, and 78,000 alumni in their network. It's quite something, this group of people you've joined.
Yes. I mean, I've met with this new alumni that's been launched. I've actually met people that have already graduated, that I find myself now, you know, even having conversations about business with them.
Phenomenal.
And that's, you know, and that's just, you know, the beauty of it, of the alumni network. Yeah.
Superb. Well, thank you for coming to spend some time with us today. And we will be chatting to you, I'm sure, again soon. In the meantime, keep doing the good work you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And good luck for your final year.
Thank you so much.
The Henley MBA is from the only international business school accredited in South Africa, as your MBA is from a leading, respected, internationally triple accredited business school. You get recognized wherever you are in the world, ensuring your global future. Meet the Mind, brought to you by Henley Business School, only on cliffcentral.com. And it's time for Decrypto. You know we're into season 2 and it's episode 7 today. We're going to talk a little bit about Luno's security. Take a listen to this, cliffcentral.com. A fool and his money are easily parted. Unfortunately, we live in a world where even losing your investments is all too easy, unless you stay sharp and avoid the scammers. Like every electronic transaction, you need to have a certain amount of awareness when dealing with crypto. We've come to Luno HQ in Cape Town for a chat with product owner Ian Rossiter. He's focused on customer security. He's got guidelines to make sure that your cryptocurrency remains your cryptocurrency.
So how do you store and protect your Bitcoin? The most important place to start when it comes to protecting your Bitcoin is understanding the strategies used by criminals to steal it. Two common strategies include phishing and scamming. These strategies aim to gain your trust and get you to either share your sign-in details on your account or to send the criminal your Bitcoin directly. With phishing, the criminal is pretending to be Luno. They'll send you an email or an SMS or a phone call requiring you to take action on your account, with threats of account closure or deactivation if you fail to do so. They will ask you to either provide your sign-in details, authorize actions on your account, or direct you to a fake Luno website to sign in order to get your details. With scamming, the criminal is not pretending to be Luno, but they are pretending to offer you what may sound like legitimate value, such as a trader who offers to sign into your Luno wallet and trade on your behalf, typically promising large returns in a short space of time. So what steps can you follow to safeguard yourself against phishing and scamming? 1. Never give your Luno sign-in details to anyone. Now, this may sound obvious, but if someone manages to gain your trust, it is easy to fall into this trap. It is important to know that Luno will never ask you to share your sign-in details, such as password or security codes. Under no circumstances will Luno ever sign into your Luno account on your behalf, and we will never deactivate the account of a legitimate Luno customer. 2. Always check the URL of the Luno website before signing in. Phishing emails, text messages, or adverts may ask you to click on a link, taking you to what appears to be a legitimate Luno website, where you will be required to sign in. Before signing into the Luno website, always check the URL. If it does not start with luno.com, it is not Luno. It is a phishing website. You can report these websites to us immediately, as well as any phishing communication, by sending us an email to phishing@luno.com. Phishing with a PH. 3. Never authorize actions on your account that you did not initiate. When performing actions on your account, you may be required to authorize these actions via push notification or SMS. That could be changing your mobile number, enabling the ability to send cryptocurrency out of your wallet, or sending. Never authorize actions on your account that you did not initiate. It is important to note that Luno will never ask you to authorize an action on your account. 4. If you notice any suspicious activity, lock your account immediately and report it to our customer success team. We notify our customers of activity on their account via email, SMS, and push notification. You'll be notified when someone signs in, buys, sells, enables the ability to send, changes your mobile number, adds an email address, and many more actions taken on your account. Keep an eye out for these notifications. And if you notice any suspicious activity, lock your account immediately and contact our customer success team. You will find your lock account link in all email notifications. So what security features can you use to protect your Bitcoin? Use strong, unique passwords. With a multitude of online accounts that customers have these days, it is tempting to use one easy-to-remember password on all of your accounts. But if this password is ever compromised, you potentially expose all of your accounts. Ensure that you use a strong, unique password and never share it or reuse it on other accounts. Use a two-factor authentication app. As a second layer of security, Luno requires a unique security code in addition to your email and password when signing into your account. By default, this code is sent to your primary email. As an enhancement to this feature, we recommend downloading and setting up an authentication app such as Google Authenticator or Authy. The app will allow you to generate these security codes on your mobile device instead of receiving them via email. And lastly, keep the ability to send cryptocurrency out of your wallet disabled. Along with the ability to buy, sell, and receive Bitcoin, your Luna wallet also provides you with the ability to send cryptocurrency to anyone. To increase the security of your Bitcoin, this feature is disabled by default and requires both your authorization and a 24-hour delay to enable it. We recommend keeping this feature disabled by disabling it after each and every send.
Decrypto is everything you need to know about buying, trading, and spending cryptocurrency. Brought to you by Luno, only on cliffcentral.com.
Cliffcentral.com.